987. Here we go.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show! All right,
that's pretty good. That's the best one yet.
I am short.
Pizza, pizza.
Showtime! My fly is open.
When you were making egg foo young in the kitchen, I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that are like it bad. For the stream is good record DLNTS.org. And the IC challenge, linuxtech.net. Bound tech show. Just sit right there, cause the gala's just about to begin.
Welcome to the Linux Link Tech Show, episode 987. On the show tonight, we have Joel.
Good evening.
We have Joe.
Hello.
Yeah, I thought I saw Pat on here before, but I don't...
He was, wasn't he?
I thought he was.
He's trying out for a heavy metal band.
Oh, well, cool. Good on him.
I hope he gets it. I hope we hear all about it.
Yep.
Yeah, that's cool. Wow. Today was a cacophony of clusterfucks, man.
Cacophony.
I'll tell you what.
Cacophony of clusterfuckery.
Yeah, it was, oh my goodness.
Your cluster's all fucked up.
Yeah, I think I mentioned last week about there being a Circle CI breach. And on December 21st, where we use Circle CI for our continuous integration environment for the VIP WordPress installation as hosted on VIP, which meant that we had to rotate all our keys and API keys that we had in there and secrets and everything, which just, you know, a little bit of a pain in the ass. The easiest one, of course, was the GitHub SSH key. That was easy to do because I control that. The API keys weren't too bad, but we had Okta certificates in there because of the single sign-on for our service. Oh boy, was that a joy. That and the Google service account. I spent all day today trying to figure out why shit wasn't working. And it was really, 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 really baffling because once you put once you put the secret into Circle CI, all you can see is the last four characters. And when we're dealing with what was a problem was when we were dealing with certificates and JSON objects, the way it works is they get injected as environmental variables into the instance running your CircleCI tests, whatever you're doing in CircleCI. And in this case, it involves setting up WordPress VIP. And I spent like so much time trying to debug things because trying to get a JSON object or sometimes these keys in as environmental variables, you have to be really careful not to have spaces, not to have new lines. I'm not quite sure what formatting the Circle CI environment applies to whatever you put in there because it's slightly different than how we handle it locally and then how VIP handles it when we have to use some of those similar things in their environments. So I initially set up what I thought was correct, and it wasn't working. The tests were all failing. And I've run it locally, and the tests would all pass. And so I was like, it was really difficult to troubleshoot this. Thank goodness, Circle CI has the capability of running a job with an SSH session that you can SSH into the instance that is created, which is great, and I know I've praised that before. which allowed me to see the environmental variables. And that was helpful, but yet I still could not quite figure out what was going on. One thing that we had noticed is that we had used the staging service account in development, or in this case for CircleCI, it's local development. And we noticed that a couple weeks ago prior to the breach, and the plan was to switch it out, but we hadn't following this breach. So I took it upon myself to switch it over to the other service account during this process. And unbeknownst to me at the time, that's what caused all these problems. But I had tested this locally and I didn't have any problems. What I had found out after repeatedly trying to format these...
Beating your head against it.
Yeah. Idiot went in initially and removed all the new lines and all the spaces. 'Cause sometimes when you put things in environmental variables, if you have... Obviously, if you have new lines in there, it's going to mess it up completely. But line breaks, not the new line character, but line breaks particularly will mess it up. And sometimes spacing can mess it up. But what I didn't pay attention to, and I should have, is that in a Google service account, JSON object, there is a SSL key embedded in there. And I kept removing the spaces from the that little phrase. What is it? The phrase in the beginning, the begin key or whatever it is, and then end key or something. I forget what the exact phrasing is at the beginning and the end of the cert or the key. Has to have the spaces in between the words, and I didn't even notice it was removing the spaces in there. So that was my first problem. The second problem was, somebody, the person who did this all set, like got all these keys before me, didn't put them in Vault in some cases. So I don't know who got the service account, but it wasn't in Vault, and I managed to find a copy of it. And for some reason, I kept using like all but the last three objects in the key. I don't know what had happened, but that caused additional issues. And what was weird is I noticed after a couple hours of troubleshooting this, and the biggest problem would be is that every time I would make a change, I would have to restart the whole thing, and it would take like 15 minutes to get to the testing point because it would have to build everything. And then build the application and build the WordPress and set everything up, and then it would start to testing, and then I would have to see the first test fail. So that is what took the lion's share of the time up. Once I discovered that, I noticed I was digging around more with the certificate and the key that I had to generate for Okta and get all that changed. And then all the test accounts that we had to be changed. So it was unclear to me, like, whether it was the test accounts, whether it was the Okta keys, whether it was the service account. But once I got all that, like, adjusted, I kind of, like, all the stuff worked locally. So I was kind of convinced that the certs and the test accounts were working correctly. But it kept dawning on me it was a service account. Now, at one point, I had inadvertently put the staging account back in there, and everything worked. And so I went back and I was put the development in there, and it stopped working again. And I was using the development key locally, and it was working, and everything was fine. But what it ended up coming down to is the way that the whole system comes together in regards to particularly the Okta stuff, because once the Okta stuff is in place, it doesn't update the database anymore. So if I change the key out of there locally, it's going to keep using the old key because it doesn't update. Even though it's in the environment, it still uses the same key that's in the database. And that was like my first clue that as to what the problem was. So what that caused me to do locally is to wipe the whole system out and start from scratch. And then I was able to replicate the problems that we were having in CircleCI. So I, again, thought it was the service. It obviously was a service account. So I found that there is a WordPress cron job that we do that populates the database with our site configurations. And that was the thing that I started running that would give me a clear indication whether or not the service account was working. Because if it wasn't working, I would get an SSL error. And if it was working, it would tell me that it succeeded in running the cron job. Now, I got it to the point that it was succeeding running the cron job, and it was still failing all the tests. And so I went back locally, and I had to wipe out my system again, and I restarted it, because I was switching around the staging and development keys, because locally I tested the staging key and it wasn't working. Then I tested the development key wasn't working. Then I tested staging and it was working. Then I went back and tested development and it was working and got it working. And then I ran the tests and the tests would all run. But what would end up happening is, similarly to the Okta stuff, when you ran the cron job to populate the site information, if it was pulling in the staging information and populating it in the database, when the dev key was being used, for some reason it's not pulling anything site related. It's not that the key wasn't working, it's just that whatever was populated for staging wasn't available for development, and so it wasn't populating that information in the database, and therefore it wasn't working with the tests. And that took a little while to get in there, because again, I would have to restart the CircleCI thing and then log in, run the cron job, and if it was successful, I'd have to connect into the database. And this is using MySQL on the command line and then having to look in the WP options table, where there's like 200 and some columns when it's successfully set up, or 167 when it's not. So I was able to figure that out, and I had to switch back to the staging account. And once I did that, everything was back to working again. But so the lessons learned from that were: pay extra careful attention, particularly to the details of what I'm trying to do, because it was easy to miss that the spaces were taken out of that key embedded into the service account object. And I was just glancing over that stuff, and the whole object seemed to be formatted fine. It would pass JSON linting, and that kind of threw me there. So like that little extra special attention to detail tripped me up. And that wasn't the only time that I got tripped up by detail. I had said that the Couchbase cluster and staging had gone down, and I got the Chef stuff up and working to where I needed it to. I was able to spin up new nodes, and I went to replace the old nodes after I recreated all the buckets, and I was having problems. I kept complaining about out of memory error on the one bucket, saying that it could not free up any more memory for that bucket. And none of the other clusters in any environment was ever experiencing that problem. And what it ultimately came out down to be is the flush settings on the bucket itself that that one bucket was the only bucket that was set to fully flush. And the reason for that is, like, the way Couchbase operates is it tries to pull as much of the bucket contents into memory as possible. And what it will do is, if something comes into memory, if you try to request something from the bucket that's not in memory, it will fetch it from the bucket, and then it will, you know, put it into the keep it in memory, and then depending on your flush settings, it will remove older objects if it can. But we don't use Couchbase like that for this particular bucket. We're not interested in it being in memory because there's like four in staging alone, there's 470 million documents in this bucket, and there's no way you're even going to get like 3% in the memory. It's not even really needed. That's not how we're using it. But what was happening is it was fetching things, and it would just consume all the memory for that bucket because the flushing wasn't enabled. What I had done when I wiped out all the buckets is that I recreated the buckets and then populated them with the data, and I looked at the first four buckets and noticed that they were all set up the same, and just assumed that this bucket was set up the same. And that's what bit me in the ass. Once I discovered that flush was not set properly, I unchecked, you know, I checked that, enabled that, and that cleared up the problem that I was having on the cluster that was causing out-of-memory errors to occur, hard out-of-memory errors to occur, and also preventing complete replication into that bucket from the other cluster. We were down about 130 to 40 million documents that weren't transferred over. And so it's paying attention to those fine details right there, those little things that really tripped me up this week a couple of times. Knock on the microphone. That's the end of that.
Well, you sound like you had a better day than the FAA did.
Who's the FAA with? Federal Aviation?
Federal Air, yes. The Federal Air. We had a nationwide ground stoppage of all airplanes.
16,000 flights delayed.
Yep. And guess what it was? Their NOTAM system had a corrupt file on their primary and their backup system.
Their what system?
Their primary NOTAM system, or Notice to Air Mission system.
That sucks.
Yeah, but the corruption was in both the main and the backup system. It's like, oops.
Oh, man.
So it's back up and going, but this shows you how deep IT has gotten into our society, you know, when a computer system could go down and all of a sudden you can't fly an airplane. So,
well, I'm glad they got it fixed. I mean, that,
yeah,
my problem only impacted a few people. That right. Problem, holy moly,
thousands to millions, probably.
Damn, but,
yep. Now, see, my case now here, Now, a few weeks ago, you know, there was a knowledge base article came out from, I forget who exactly came out from it, maybe our R&D team or somebody, but it says, hey, for the new PDF, they basically redid how they generated PDF files for their, tax forms. So, 1098-Ts, 1099s, and W-2s. Okay, and they said, well, you need to have one listener set to 2 gigabytes, and you have to go into the screen in the system and set it to 500 pages per PDF file, which means it'll stop generating, generate the file, and then start on the next one. So basically, would split it and split the whole job into chunks. Okay, well. You know, they And then there was a little statement in that says, hey, you know, this is what on-prem does. If you're in the cloud, well, you only have to do the other part. And, you know, and that's already taken care of if you're in the cloud. Well, guess what? It wasn't. yeah, so that was kind of my day, you know, where we'd had listeners in production crashing because they ran out of memory. So, and non-prod was also there too, because there was actually some people that were actually testing it. That's the weird thing too, when they're generating files, a lot of our clients will just, you know, they just want all the software updates just applied into production. They just want to get it done in production. And I'm like, well, don't you think you should test it first? Yeah. Anyway, so that's been my day, chasing listeners and making sure they stayed up, and if they had enough memory on the box, going that. That's going to be a conversation halfway through my day tomorrow with the engineering team. Says, you know, we need to do what we can to make it possible to test them in non-prod and have enough memory there. But, oh well, that's what they pay me the big bucks for, I guess.
When did they start doing that?
Well, like, you know, beginning of the new year, you know. So that's been stuff's been going on all month.
Oh, no, I was asking when they started paying you the big bucks.
Oh, a long time ago now.
They pay him in almond flour pizza crust.
This does not surprise me.
No, that's not enough. Got to pay for my house, pay for my son's classes, stuff like that.
They pay you in pizza on Fridays.
We don't get pizza. We occasionally will get to order our own lunch and put it on the company dime, but that not going to happen anytime soon. So, although we did make it such that they had a system set up for health screen. You basically had to go through a screening before you can come into the office. That's gone. They got rid of that. So I would say it's mostly back to normal. But you still have, like, if you're one of those that happen to be fortunate enough to live close enough to an office, you have to go into this Envoy system and reserve your spot before you.
Yeah, we were doing that for a while, and yeah, then they just dropped the whole reservation system.
Yep. Well, they still use Envoy, so, but that'll be different.
You know what? You know what, Joel? You're gonna love this, man. I when I reached out to Identity Management about having to fix the Okta certs and the rotate the service, the test accounts and stuff like that, the one thing that was on the back of my mind is, please don't make me put in a ServiceNow ticket. So I was talking to a guy that I've worked with in the past, and he's really thorough. He's a good guy. And I kept saying, you know, this is what we need to do. And he's like, well, yeah, I'm going to need you to generate another Okta cert and send it to me. Because that's the way that it works with Okta, is that you get the public key for Okta, and then you create a key pair for yourself to send to Okta, and I give him the key and I keep the cert, and then the server has to have both the key and the cert for verifying with Okta. And then I said, how do you want me to send you?
Yeah, what format, right?
And he's like, I don't care how you send it to me. I'm like, do you know, how could I? Was not like, how do you want me to send it to you, but like where, how, like, how can I send it to you? And he's like, oh, you can just send it to me as a file over Teams. And I'm like, thank goodness I don't have to put it in a service. Okay. And then I said, okay, now what about these test accounts? And I gave him the names of the accounts, and he's like, yeah, we'll probably need we'll have to do a ticket for this. And he's like, do you have access to the secret server? And I'm like, I haven't had access to Secret Server in years.
Long time.
And he's like, oh, shit, how are we going to do this? And I'm like, usually I just get stuff from the engineering team from via Keybase, and he's looking through this. And he's like, and I'm like, you know, what kind of ticket do I have to put in? Is it like a request account change? Or he's like, no, just put in a regular ticket.
Yeah, service
and I
now,
go to service
sure,
now.
Yeah, right.
And I go to service now. I don't have an ability. I don't have an option to create a ticket. Like I have like on the ServiceNow page, there's these like sections, and it says,
"Got to create a request."
Yeah, you know, what do you need to do? And it's like change an account, request an account, you know, delete an account, or and then like then there's all these other things, and there's nothing for just putting in a ticket. Like I can't put in just a ticket. And then I go, there's a, that keeps forcing me to like go to these tutorials. And it's like,
All right.
So I'm like, there's a tutorial on how to open a ticket, right? So I'm like, I can't believe it's come to this that I have to watch a tutorial on how to open just a fucking ticket. And it says, okay, in the first thing it says in the search bar, search for the problem that you're having. And then there's a tab, the middle tab, that opens up along with the search op results that come back is a tab that says open a ticket. So I'm like, all right, we're in.
On
man, we're
some
in.
Of those damn
I
things,
I click on
that
open
a...
the ticket.
I and click they made on the, you do the thing again, right?
I click on the open the ticket tab, and it's just like page after page after page of here's the task that you can do. Not just open a ticket, but here's a ticket. You know, open a ticket to do this, open a ticket to do that. And none of these things are just like what I want to do. It's just open a ticket. So finally he's like, you know what?
Let's just open a ticket.
He's like, I'm going to set you up with self-service on these accounts. That way you can just go into Okta, log in with the old password, and change it yourself. And I'm like, thank you. Thank you. You're the greatest that I didn't have to do anything in this confusing mess called ServiceNow.
Oh, it's not your favorite tool?
Oh.
Not my favorite
tool. We were supposed to be switching to ServiceNow.
We have it, and we've been using it for years.
But I don't think they're ever actually going to stop using Remedy, so.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing, too. It's like our old team's the engineering team, and they're the ones that have to fix. Like, for example, one of the issues we ran into this week is they need more memory on the server because they don't have enough memory to do this, you know, to increase what they need to. Otherwise, the stupid listener is going to crash every freaking time they try to run these PDF files. So, you know, we can't create a case for them. I think they're what it's going to boil down to is they want Jira tickets or something, and I'm like, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, it's
no, we're
like,
getting pushed for more Jira tickets, and I understand, because the development teams, they use Jira tickets.
That's
and we
right.
use a completely separate, like, two or three other ticketing systems, but we don't generally use Jira. The only time I use Jira is when I can't get the development team to listen that this needs done. And then I'll go in and I'll make a ticket in Jira and it'll eventually get handled.
Right. Or it's like the one incident I handled today, which, oh, you'll love this. It's like I get an incident from an alert, you know, from one of our monitors that says that, hey, UI is not working for this client. I get in there and get it, well, the first attempt fixed. It did work, but as soon as I got the synthetic to resolve in Datadog,
but you know what I don't
I
need?
Get another case from the client, and then they try it and it worked for five people, and then they got the same error again. So I had to fix the listener again and increase the memory, and it's like, yeah, you know. But, so I got two different take cases that's the same issue. It's like,
do you know what I really, really don't need? Another ticketing system.
Yes, I'm with you.
I mean, seriously, how many ticketing systems do I need?
Yep. And then all that incident finished, we got that finished. They were up and running and good to go, which means they probably, whoever was running the PDF file probably decided I got to give it up and try it tomorrow. So they'll have an incident tomorrow, maybe.
Oh, then God forbid I should try to interface with another team, and they're like, oh, well, right. We have another ticketing system. Well, and then I go and try better. And put in a ticket, and, hey, I don't have access to your ticketing system.
Uh-huh, well, yeah.
Oh, well, then I guess you can't put in a ticket. Sorry, we don't have to do your work.
Well, this is all within ServiceNow, okay? So there is a problem ticket that they wanted to create, it, and they wanted to assign it to my team, and I'm like, well, they're choosing the wrong group and all this stuff, and this is all the EOC doing this. And I'm like, just give it to this group. They're the ones that need to address it for the rest of the clients anyway. So, you know, and he's like, thanks. And I'm like, yeah. And then in other cases where I want to assign, like I had a case came in that was for one of the other teams on the action line, and those teams don't use incidents, they use cases. But I got this case out here, so what do I have to do for the incident? I had to cancel it. I'm like, oh my God. I'm like,
yes,
you know,
canceling an incident takes an act of God.
Well, actually, it's fairly easy for us, but
well,
yeah,
you know, it's technically only one click for the person that has
right.
the access to be able to do it in Remedy, get rid of an MI, but that's usually
right.
band three.
Yep. Well, we're not that complicated though, so that's a thankful thing. But it's like the EOC screwed up in the first place and gave it to us in the first place because they don't know what they're doing. And it's like,
well, for a while there, you had people that were using incorrect release methods.
Mm.
So you require X number of approvals for a release, right?
Mm-hmm.
And even then, you require a lead time, usually 5 days to 7 days, depending on the potential impact of said release, to give you time for testing. What some teams were doing for a short amount of time in order to get around lead times, because they want it done yesterday, was if you need an emergency release, you can get it done if you have an incident number.
Mm-hmm.
But what they were doing was they were creating an incident, using that to create a release, and then getting rid of the incident so that the incident wasn't held against their records.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so it's been a fun week for me, too. So, I mean, it's just...
Oh, this has been a while ago.
Anymore.
That's why they put those things into place where you need band 3 to get rid of a MI.
Yeah.
You know what? I have to say, I've read a lot of reviews on ServiceNow. And everything that I read, when people say they absolutely hate ServiceNow and it sucks,
they probably are the people that haven't dealt with any other ticketing system.
What I keep reading follow-up responses are, it's probably because whoever set up your ServiceNow didn't do it right.
That sounds like it's a pain in the ass to set up then.
Yeah, now, to be fair, when I look at how our ServiceNow is set up, it seems like if I wanted to do any of those tasks, it looks like it should be fairly easy to get one of those tasks done. I don't know, because I've never had to do any of those tasks. Everything I've ever had to do has been an exercise in futility because none of those tasks work for me. So I don't know.
You the outlier?
I must be. Well, I guess I would be the outlier. I'm not the only one who complains about ServiceNow. Like this other guy I work with, he's like, yeah, I never use ServiceNow anymore. I just send a request to support the service desk, an email to the service desk, and it gets automatically created in a ticket, and they figure out where it needs to go.
Would your coworker be like the same outlier that you are? If he's doing the exact same things that you are.
He's doing similar stuff to me, yes. So I think we're both kind of... I'm surprised that we're outliers. But, Yeah, I even before when I was using ServiceNow, I never understood it, and I had to use it like on a daily basis. It was just a cluster.
Sucks.
Of is it what am I filling out here? Am I filling out a service request, an incident report, a change task? What do I have to do? Mm-hmm. There's like so many different things. It's like you fill out this request, and then you create an incident, and then you have to create change tasks for the incident, and somebody has to approve this, and this has to be approved by that person. And once it's approved, then you can move on to the next step. And I'm like, how do you even deal with this?
Mm-hmm. Well, I know.
I'm all for accountability, but, you know, and then what did we end up doing? We're like, fuck it. The developers are in control of this. They're responsible. If it breaks,
it's like the modern day version of the TPS reports, man.
Yeah.
How much time do you actually invest in doing in checking the accountability of your people? Probably none. You know, because you have the system where if somebody does fuck up something, you supposedly have a record, but you know, in the meantime, you make everybody else jump through 40 fucking hoops just to get their job done.
Now if somebody does screw up, we kind of know who did it because they're the ones that did it. They're the ones that pushed it. They screwed it up. So they got to fix it, you know? And it's right. Fine. It's not like everybody's like, what the hell happened? It's like, oh, somebody did this and now we need to fix it. Okay. That makes sense. You know?
Yep. But
yeah, I'm happy with Jira, man. I am happy with Jira.
I got
our Jira seems to be a bit all over the place. I think we technically have two Jira sites that we could potentially use. Like some of our applications are on the one, some of our applications are on the other, and then the process of digging through to find the actual like application within those two sites is a little janky.
And then at some point they're going to try and merge the two, and then it's going to get worse.
Right. But once you actually find it, then yeah, you have to make sure that it gets assigned to the proper application, and you have to fill it out correctly so that the developers actually know that you want, and make sure that there's a good contact for them to come back on. And as long as they don't try and come back at 3 a.m., you're good to go, and eventually your problem gets solved.
Or my favorite is an incident happens at the end of the day, you get it fixed before you end of your day, but you gotta sit there for another half hour and wait for the client to respond before you can close the fucking ticket.
Right, because it has to be verified. It's not complete until somebody else signs off on it.
Which means you're sitting there and your family's like, hey, what's taking so long? I'm hungry.
Yeah, well, the client already went to dinner with his family, so once he's done and his kids are in bed, he's going to come back and get online and let me know that I can go and eat. I'm not bitter.
I'm not either, but I got a new drone on Friday, and I'm really having a lot of fun with it.
DJI? You got what?
I got a DJI Mini 3. And it's really not. It's exceeded my expectations. I want to say that because it's every bit as good as my larger one, and it even flies pretty decent in the wind too, for as little as it is. It's under
for its narrow wingspan.
Yeah, it's tiny. It's weighs in around 249 grams, which is under the 250 limit. So I don't have to
have a
register
license.
It's not the license part. You know, if you're doing recreation, if you're over 250, you still have to get the register the drone. And now they're also adding and I don't think it's fully needed until September this year. I don't know how older drones are going to fit into this. But there's a new system that they're putting in there called Radio ID. So both your drone and your remote will basically report to the FAA.
Probably completely unenforceable on older drones. Let's be serious.
Yes, this is true. But because you need a software update to your drone. It also makes me wonder what happens to those. Because I've met a few people who built their own quads. Like, well, I think didn't Peter 64 did that, but he's in Australia, so that doesn't count. but
well, for a while there, like every YouTube, like DIY or hacking channel was showing you how to make your own drone, specifically because the rules were coming down from the FAA about what you could and couldn't fly.
Right. So I suppose they still let you build your own, but that's just like a lot of people believe that, oh, you can't use a certain ham radio unless it's FAA type accepted, and that's not the case at all. You can literally build your own radio from scratch, and that doesn't have to be type accepted. What that means is that...
yes, but they can't get you for broadcasting on certain frequencies.
Well... not really. The only way they can get you is if you're violating spurious emissions or other things, or like using your radio outside the bands you're licensed for.
Exactly.
So, but type acceptance is basically a system the FCC puts in place that when like ICOM, it's basically for commercially made radios. If you want to build your own radio from scratch, you know, go out and buy all the components and do it and make it work, the FCC can't do anything about it. The only thing is you take that responsibility, and really that responsibility still lies on the licensee even if you use a type accepted radio. So a lot of people really have this weird thing, and it's kind of going to be the same. I think it's going to be the same kind of thing with drones. It's like, well, you know, and they're not going to make you throw out your drone just because it was made before this stupid rule came into place. So, and that's, right. That's for sure in other countries. Like in Europe, they've done some similar things.
They won't try to get you to go and get a radio put on your drone or something.
Right, but... and that's the other option, too, on some of those, is that I guess somebody is going to make some... attachments that you can put on your drone and on your remote that will do that job for you, but
brings them up to code or whatever.
Whatever. You know, I'll just use that one anyway. You know, the other one anyway. Honestly, though, the one I have does support radio ID, so I don't have to worry about that. Even though it's not required to support it, because these smaller drones don't have to support it. This is mostly for those heavier ones that if they fall out of the air, it hits somebody in the head.
What do you think about ways
to
volumize oatmeal? Because, you know, I really enjoy my oatmeal.
Volumize oatmeal.
Yeah, I really enjoy my oatmeal, but I don't really seem to be full when I'm done eating it.
Oh.
Told you I was going to bring it back around to food.
You put any stuff in?
Put protein powder, powdered peanut butter, and then usually for flavor, I will put in Reese's Pieces, the unwrapped.
Okay.
It's really quite good. It's a dessert almost. Either that or
I think you've done all the things that I would suggest.
I will do some cinnamon or maple syrup along with protein powder, but that's usually then either chocolate or vanilla protein powder at that point.
You've
kind of
done everything I would have suggested.
I know some people,
something else with it.
I know some people have suggested riced cauliflower, but essentially you got to cook the crap out of the rice cauliflower before you put it into the oatmeal, and I don't know if that really adds much to your oatmeal.
I have been getting some of the like Healthy Choice and others that have the rice cauliflower in it.
I like rice cauliflower.
It's
but there's nothing to it.
I don't really
there's no
like
flavor
it.
There.
That's the thing, is I don't like it.
But you got to cook the piss out of it in something else to give it that flavor.
Yeah.
In order to make it worthwhile.
It's like these dishes. These things I get from them, these frozen, it's basically a little frozen lunch thing, they don't have, like, of the healthy choice ones, like it had, the one was chicken marinara, and there was chicken in it, but there's also a bunch of vegetables and stuff in it as well with the rice cauliflower. And it was called chicken marinara, but there was like maybe a ketchup packet's worth of marinara in it. And horrible. It was. Yeah,
what's really bad is if you get the right marinara sauce, great. There's practically no calories in it.
That's the thing. Yeah,
you look at your cheaper spaghetti sauces, and it's like 25 calories for a cup.
Yep. Ralph's is a big one that that a lot of people suggest for those trying to keep their sugar down. Another one that's good if you have high blood pressure is Rinaldi. They're lower in sodium out of the jar. But, you know, still it's like, you know, these frozen things, it's like, I choke them down just because I want to try and keep my bad meal is almost always dinner because...
No, yeah, your big meal is almost always dinner.
Right, correct. So it's like I don't go hungry during the day, but like here's a good example. Like last night after I did make dinner, I whipped up some eggs and stuff, threw them in some muffin cups, baked them about 350 until the eggs were done, and then put them in a big Ziploc bag, and I pulled out a couple of those and microwaved those. That's what I had for breakfast, my coffee.
Oh, just some scrambled eggs? I mean, you didn't, like,
basically,
put some peppers and onions in them, or...
I need to perfect that. This time I'll put, like, Asiago cheese and bacon bits.
Yeah, I would definitely go with the Asiago cheese, and maybe not the Asiago. I'd probably go for, like, a fat-free cheese. But the bacon bits sound good.
Then I threw cheddar on top because I like the how the surface gets with the melted cheddar
top. Yeah.
But that's it. It was very simple. But next time I might put some like onions or something.
Yeah, if you're gonna do the whole onions and peppers thing though, I would definitely fry the crap out of the onions and peppers before they went into the bake.
Yeah.
Just to give them that little Christmas, so they don't caramelize
a little bit.
Yeah, so they don't make your eggs all like watery after you're done baking them, because that's horrible in the muffin tin.
I did them in the paper muffin cups, and I need to get some of the aluminum ones because it'll peel off a little easier.
but the silicone ones, get the silicone ones.
Yeah, that's actually a good idea too, because I like getting there's these egg bite things that you can get Sam's Club. We'll have them, but they're almost all, it's like a 4-pack of them, but they're god awful expensive.
I just went to Sam's Club the other day.
Yeah, and the ones they had there were sausage. Oh, I always use the Scan to Go. I don't mind going to Sam's Club.
Oh,
I
no, just... the value really wasn't there. The number of people that were there did suck. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But the overall amount that you say, yeah. It's
right.
Very iffy. Like, there's certain specific things that I would get there as opposed to somewhere else. And then if
cleaning
I'm doing that...
Cleaning supplies, always.
Yeah, if I'm doing that, I'm doing curbside.
Right.
I'm not going in there unless it's at 8 a.m.
Yeah, I don't mind it because, I never stand in lines at Sam's Club. I just go get my shit, scan it as a... We will, make sure that we have money... in either our normal checking or I've actually added one of our alternative accounts that we have that my wife uses to put, to save money in. So we'll either use one of those two just to avoid going to the checkout. But these egg bites, though, like the Sam's Club, see, this is the problem with some of the things at Sam's Club or even at Costco is it'll either be everything's the same in the box or it's a variety pack, and you don't like anything in the variety pack. That's what happens with me. I could save a bunch of money if I bought and only have to buy them once a month if I bought the pack of Bang energy drinks that Sam's Club has. But all the flavors they have in their mix of flavors in that pack, I detest and I don't want.
Yeah, Bang is hit or miss for a lot of people considering how sweet it is. I tend to like most of the flavors, except they're whole lot of chocolate.
They're usually pretty good. Yeah, that one. I've drank that one several times, and I'm not gonna buy it again. And I've tried the cookies and cream keto coffee is awful. It's bad.
Yeah, there are more bitter flavors tend to be terrible.
Now, the keto peanut butter and chocolate coffee drink they have is actually pretty good. But so I will drink that one. But it's that one. But I usually don't get that one. I'll do black cherry vanilla, Star Blast, key lime pie, candy apple crisp, and that's my basically all the ones I usually try to get. And occasionally I'll hit up a Sour Heads. That one's not horrible either. Not my favorite, but I only drink one a day.
Strawberry one.
I've had that. It's sickeningly sweet to me.
Yeah, I kind of like it.
Now, here's an interesting thing that I discovered last time at the grocery store. Sierra Mist is gone, replaced by Starry. Which is your basic lemon-lime soda. That's a Pepsi brand or Pepsi-generated brand for lemon-lime soda, basically competitor to Sprite. And available in regular and zero sugar. I tried it. Wouldn't try again.
Yeah.
I liked CRMS better, to be honest. This one was a little bit more.
I've never been a Sprite fan, so.
Yeah, I haven't either. I'd rather have ginger ale if I'm drinking something like that.
And they don't make too many sugar-free ginger ales.
Not too many.
But there's one or two companies that do, but they're usually so bland.
Oh, that's like why I like L8 is not at all like that. It's close. It's the way I describe L8 is it's like a ginger ale, but it's not.
Well,
it has that ginger ale wang to it, but it also has citrus in it too.
Like Canada Dry has a bold version. Now, it is definitely not sugar-free, but no. That has some excellent flavor to it.
Yeah, I personally can't find a good ginger ale that's got enough ginger in it for me.
Try the Canada Dry Bold. I don't recommend it on every day, but
I might just grab a bottle of it, but I'm still trying to figure out why it's taken forever for Pepsi to nail down something that's literally a standard in the pop world that every brand has at least one of. You got either 7-Up, Sprite, or the store brands. They all have figured it out. You know, why do you have to change it every few years? Just because it doesn't sell. Well, they under Sierra Mist, they used to have a cranberry one that was really good. And it wasn't sugar-free or zero sugar variant too, and they'd have that pretty much November to December. But I drank all my AL8 already, so and I don't know when I'm gonna go down to Tennessee. Probably not for a year, the way things go. I will get me some Birch beer though when I go to Pennsylvania. Maybe I should get some of that John Cope's corn.
Dried corn, baby. Like
some, the dried corn.
Get some of that Kutztown Birch beer.
Like I was saying earlier, I had already cooked my burritos for the next 2 weeks. So that's all meal prepped out. And I think after this show, I am going to make spaghetti sauce.
Yep.
I don't know how long that'll last. I'm going to freeze a portion of it this time because last time I ended up throwing some away.
I hate when it happens. I don't say, did you have a pork and sauerkraut on New Year's?
I did.
Yeah.
I did. I had made it, and I have some in the freezer for another meal.
I should have put mine in the freezer.
It
my family used
delicious.
To make sauerkraut. We used to make our own.
Yeah, I've made my own sauerkraut. I should have made it.
It's not hard, lazy. But you gotta have the right stuff to make a volume of it.
I've never really been a fan of sauerkraut, but I am a huge fan of kimchi.
Well, I make kimchi too. I love both of those.
Oh, I love kimchi, especially like that spicy, like burn your sinuses kimchi. The stuff that's like perfect for clearing everything out and making it so you can breathe again.
So it's spicy and tastes like battery acid.
Exactly. And then you put that in your chicken noodle soup, and you're like, "Oh my god, this is."
Now you see. Now you're making me want to go get some pho.
Make fried rice out of it. Make you name it, man. Kimchi's great.
Kimchi's awesome.
I just haven't found one I like yet.
I don't know how to make kimchi.
Some, right, I've had some, but I haven't found any at the store that I will reliably like.
Making kimchi is really easy.
Right? Well, I'm sure it's not hard, but...
Well, how do you make it?
So you get some... you cut up some cabbage. Maybe you want to add some... you can do bok choy. I put carrots in it. Put there's a couple of different ways you do it, but if you want to make it really simple, you take that, you salt it, and you take like a couple of tablespoons, two tablespoons, depending on how much cabbage you have. Let's say you're doing like a head of cabbage, right? Mm-hmm. And so you take a tablespoon of salt and you thoroughly rub it into kosher salt, rub it into once you've cut up the leaves and stuff. Rub it in there and let it sit for like 20 minutes and let it, drain a little bit. I usually put it in a colander, let it drain. And then you rinse it and try and get out as much of the water as possible. Then you're going to get some of the Korean red chili pepper. You could use gochujang if you want to, but if you just go buy the Korean red chili pepper, depending on how much you want, rub that in there. I usually do it by hand. They recommend you put on gloves, but I really don't care because I've burned my eyes enough times with it that I'm kind of used to it. So you do that. I add a little fish sauce onto it, and then you pack it into a jar, and you push it down so that some of the juices that get released kind of come up to the top and cover it. Then you put a cabbage leaf on top of it and close it up, leave it on your counter for like 24 hours, burp it a few times, and then stick it in the fridge for a week and it's ready to go. Some other things that you can put into it. There's, sometimes they more authentic recipes call for a dried shrimp. You can find that at an Asian market. I forget exactly what it's called, but you can throw that in there. But that it's pretty easy. It's you can get an actual crock to put it in, or I just use like mason jars. And it tastes good. Just make sure you keep everything pretty clean.
Yeah, especially if you're gonna let it sit for a week.
Yeah, and it's got a lot of...
you gotta plan it out.
Yeah, I usually put, like, I'll use cabbage, maybe some bok choy, some Savoy cabbage, some Chinese cabbage, different kinds of cabbage you might want to throw in there. Daikon radish, I get that in there. Carrots and green onions go well in there, too. I've done it with all of that stuff. The thing is, you got to be careful because you can make a ton of it really easily.
I can eat a ton of it really easily.
Well, there you go. And once you start making it, you never go back to the store-bought stuff.
How long does it last in the fridge? If it takes like a week to make, and then how long after that can you?
I've had it in there for a couple of months. You just got to, if it looks green and smells... Like
don't
not right,
it.
Yeah. Don't eat
right.
it. If you can taste it when it's starting to go bad. Like it'll have a different kind of tingliness on your tongue,
different wang.
Yeah, you'll know. You'll be like, It doesn't taste bad, but it just doesn't taste right, and maybe I shouldn't be eating it at that point. I know, but if you love kimchi that much and you eat it like crazy, you'll go through it really fast.
Yeah, I can
kimchi
see
is
him.
Delicious.
Joke.
Or I put it in recipes. I would put it in everything. Yeah, I would put it in burritos. I
absolutely would definitely put it in burritos, eggs.
Oh, it would be in everything.
Miso soup.
Oh. Miso.
Stir fries.
Oatmeal. It'd be my oatmeal.
Cheesecake.
In your oatmeal. Kimchi. You know what?
Kimchi cheesecake.
Okay. I'm in a group.
Kimchi like cheesecake Chex group. Mix?
Actually, I've seen a lot of like recipes recently for like savory oatmeal. Like a pizza oatmeal.
Ooh, no. I love it, pizza.
It'd be something I'd be willing to try.
Yeah.
But that's just me.
At least I finally found, like you know, you heard me mention putting Asiago cheese in my egg bites. I was making it at home. I finally found the grocery store around here that actually has a decent selection of cheese. And it's one I hardly ever go to, that I used to go to all the time when I lived over at my old house, Kroger. They have just this selection that is out of
usually
this world.
Yeah, Kroger usually has a pretty good selection on cheeses.
Yeah, I mean, they had Asiago, and that actually was one of the cheaper ones. You know, because, like, I'd pick up a wedge, and it's like $12, and I'm like, it seems intriguing. Yeah, I might want to try that, but not right now. I just wanted something different than cheddar, which I love cheddar cheese, but it's like,
why don't you go down to Aldi or Little? They got a shit ton of cheese.
Yeah, they do too. Sometimes
you have a Little.
We don't have a Little. We have
I
an
have
Aldi.
Both.
Yeah, you're lucky.
They're like a mile apart too.
He's got Aldi Nord and Aldi Sud, because that's the two differences, I think. Because they're both Aldi. They're the two different Aldis from Europe.
I watch some European podcasters.
Well, there you go, yeah.
And some Irish podcasters, and they were always talking about Littles and Aldis, and yeah.
Aldis don't have those here. Aldi's is where I used to go get Jaffa cakes, store branded Jaffa cakes.
Scott Murray's dead.
What I find weird about like Aldi and Little is that Aldi to me seems more on the like English German side, and Little is more on the Italian Spanish side. But Little has like. I can't get salami at Aldi, but I can get it at Little, and Parmesan cheese is readily available at Aldi, but it's sometimes hard to find at Little, and it's just like there's like weird things that they each have that I would expect to be more available in the other store than in there.
My favorite snack to get if I want like a chip-like thing is they have sweet potato chips over at Aldi. I love those. Those are good.
Oh, I actually had to order popcorners from Amazon because nobody's freaking selling them anymore. And those things are great. I mean, depending on what flavor, I got the multi-pack, so it's like 120 to 140 calories.
Yeah.
And you put that in a bowl, you sprinkle some cheese on top, you put it in the microwave for 30 seconds, and it's good. Maybe a little hot sauce with the cheese. Oof.
Now I need to go to we also have a Ollie's bargain outlet. You probably
Ollie's.
Had one when you were in Ollie's
one in down
Pennsylvania.
Here.
Yeah. Because
you have duck walls?
Never heard of them.
The Ollie's is supposed to have, I found these keto cheese crackers called Fat Snacks. I did order some from Amazon, but Ollie's is supposed to have them. Granted, Ollie's is a lot like a Big Lots. So once it's gone, it's gone. So you're not going to see it again. But they are decently priced on some of the things. You know, they have good prices. Like books, they have a huge book section. They always have that. If you like, you know, Dead Tree books. But some of their other stuff can be hit or miss. So I'll have to go over there and see if they have those cheese crackers, because I love them things. They're delicious. Nothing wrong with the cheese, it, but they're a little bit higher in carbs than I want to be.
Yeah, I will wreck a box of Cheez-Its.
Oh, me
better
too.
I will destroy a box of Better Cheddars.
Yeah.
And if you give me, like, Better Cheddars and Easy Cheese, call it a night.
So do you spray the Easy Cheese in your mouth or on the cracker?
On the cracker. On the cracker. A little bit of self-respect.
Yes. I actually took, like, you know how the grocery stores will take, like, some of their long loaf breads, and then they'll cut them up into little, I assume it's little pieces of bread for making crostinis. So I took some of those, and then I have this garlic butter that I brushed on, and then I grated some Asiago over top of that and ate that. I'm sure that was not low carb, but it was delicious. Microwaved it just long enough for that cheese to melt. Then I've been seeing things like I saw
a recipe for some homemade Cheez-Its the other day.
Ooh, did you? Oh.
Yeah. It's basically just like air fried cheese.
Yeah.
It is how they did it. But I'm not sure how well that would actually work. Air fried cheese with a bunch of spices on top.
Yeah.
Because all I have for myself is the thinner slices, and they were actually using like the thicker slices.
Yeah. You know, here's something that I've done, which makes a decent little snack. If you get that Hormel Cup and Crisp cheese, or not cheese, pepperoni. All right, put that like on a paper towel and sprinkle like garlic powder and maybe oregano and some Parmesan on it, and then microwave it for like 15-second increments until they cup up and get crispy. Oh, and there's no carbs in that.
Oh, you know what lit a fire under my ass, Joel?
Kerosene?
Nah, yeah. close. So I went to, what did I do? I grilled some Mahi Mahi this weekend. And I wasn't paying attention to the weather, and it rained that night, the next day. Uh-oh. So got a little bit of water in my grill, and then I had it emptied out. Right, but I noticed that the bottom of the base of the grill is rusting out again, and so it's got like this three metal bars that come in and form a groove that the ash pan has a nub on it that fits right into the groove, and you slide it guides it in there, so then you can clip it on with the clips on the side, and the one rusted out and is like hanging loose now, and it's not that it's unusable, it's just that I have to be careful not to knock, you know, rust, get the other ones out, so I'm gonna have to replace that base again.
Yeah.
That's like $124.
So you can just replace the base instead of the whole grill,
right?
Yeah, or you could get the green egg, right?
It's an Acorn Komodo, so it's $124 to replace it. It was like a $700 grill. Welder. Yeah, but I don't have one of those.
I like my pellet grill, but it's harder when it gets colder. Yeah, when it gets colder, it's harder to cook on the pellet grill. It's harder for it to keep temp. until I get, they do have one way that you can help that when you're cooking on those in the colder weather is you can put, a lot of people will go to like, Harbor Freight and get a welding, blanket. They'll put that over it. Or they do make custom made things. Rust-Oleum for painting his egg.
Or on the Komodo. Outside, I don't see why not.
This isn't on the outside. This is like,
oh, it's the inside part.
It's on
right?
the inside. Oh.
That's because I'm not, and this is something I learned over the years is that ash is caustic. It can basically eat through the metal.
Yeah, and I try to keep it clean, but I'm also in like a very humid /
right.
salty area, and that corrodes it too. So this would be the second time I'm replacing the base. The first time was under warranty. This time it wouldn't.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm not too frosted about it. I kind of expect it that either right. have to buy a new one or replace it because I can't really store it anywhere indoors, which stinks.
I do have a cover on my Pit Boss, and I religiously put that sucker back on. So
yeah, but it's not going to stop the humidity.
In my case, it's humidity and pellets, which generally I don't have a problem with that. I've never had my Pit Boss jam, so there's that.
With the salt and the humidity, a cover's not going to do a whole lot for it.
Down there, yeah. But it's a little different. That, and you talk about that, and it brings up the government, specifically this Consumer Product Safety Commission, trying to ban the sale of gas ovens.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Which
I'm like, they're not trying. They already put in the stuff to help people switch from gas to electric.
Yeah.
And some of the studies that have come out on that are actually a little bit disturbing on, like, the carcinogens and things that come out with gas stoves. But is that scare tactics? I don't know.
I think a lot of it is. That's what I want to know.
Who profits from that? I mean, seriously. Switching from gas to, or switching from gas to electric. Who really profits from that? It's not really profitable to one specific person then, or one specific group then. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
What would be the point of a scare tactic like that?
And the bigger one is a lot of them are claiming it makes things that can affect asthmatics, which I don't have asthmatics here, you know, but I will say this. There's a lot of people that are saying, well, electric stoves will cook your food. I'm like, those are people who have never tried a gas stove.
Well, I've actually cooked on both.
Yeah.
I've actually cooked on both. And the consistency of an electric is something that I prefer.
Interesting. Because I'm actually the other way around.
Yeah, over a gas.
Right.
Now, don't get me wrong. Like, my electric probably could use replacing because there's like one burner that really gets hotter than all the others.
Right.
It is the one with more surface area, but, you know, if I want water to boil, that's I'm going to put it on that one.
Right.
Well, I probably need to replace that whole cooktop. But overall, the cooking experience on electric is just more consistent than over an open flame.
Yeah, that's not my experience. But then I use a lot nicer pans, too. But my favorite
what you're
is cast iron.
Joe uses shit pans.
I do. I use shitty pans. I don't pay a lot for pans because I know who washes my pans. And the coating would not stay on a nice pan. Trust me.
Right.
Ask me how I know.
Yeah, I know. I know.
You know, I agree 100% with you, Joe. I bought
a
nice
pans.
Stainless steel pan or carbon steel pan. And I regret buying it because it's nice. But you have to
treat it. Did it have a nonstick coating on it? Or?
No, it didn't have a nonstick. You have to treat it with, like, kid gloves. You know, huh. you can't use metal utensils in it because you'll scratch it. You got to be careful to clean it. And I'm like, you know, and
cast iron's the way to go.
Chefs that I listen to, they're like, I'm not going to waste my money on $100 pans. I'll just go out and buy a cheap
$14 one. Yeah, I'll go out and buy a cheap one
and use it. And if it breaks, you know, I'm going to throw it out and buy a new one.
Yeah. I like cast iron and they're cheap.
Oh, yeah.
They're easy to take care of.
Aside from my wok, that's everything else I just use is some version of cast iron.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd like to get some more, though. I'd like to get a stovetop cast iron Dutch oven.
The nonsticks are mostly a freaking joke. Right. In my experience, anyway.
Yeah, nonsticks. I hate nonsticks. I really do. The true nonstick, my cast iron, I never put soap on it. If I put anything in to help clean it, it's just water. And that's just to help scrape up the stuck-on bits. If it actually has any. Most of the time, it doesn't. And it only gets more nonstick as time goes on, because that's...
It depends on who's cooking, too, because
that's
the first time somebody burns the crap out of something and you end up with all that carbon on the bottom.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
That is such a pain to clean.
Yeah, you got to scrape that off. But, yeah, but generally, it just gets better. And what I do is, if I do rinse it off, I dry it down with a paper towel. Then I'll take some cooking oil, pour it in there, kind of wipe it around, let it soak in for a bit, and then wipe up the excess with more paper towels.
But there are some health benefits to cooking with cast iron as well.
Oh, yeah. You get iron in your
food.
Yeah,
you don't have to worry about iron supplementation, so.
Yes. So, I mean, yeah. And I have a larger pan right now. That's the only one I have. I need to get maybe some of the smaller ones. Although the smaller ones, I probably wouldn't use as much. I probably need to look at like one that's good enough to put a pot of chili on, you know. I have made chili in it.
I really like my giant stainless steel wok.
I need to get a wok. Yeah. Woks are more useful for more than just Asian food.
Well, for any type of meal prep, they love the wok.
Yeah.
If I'm making spaghetti for the family, I'm going to use the wok because I'm making a lot
right.
of sauce.
So that's, but like, that's my cookware, and I love it, and it works wonderfully on a gas stove. Things I like about the gas stove versus an electric stove, there's no wait time for the burner itself to heat up. It's on instantly. The only time you're waiting for is heating the pan itself up, and that doesn't take long on a cast iron. Generally, I do find it more consistent. Now, it's the one thing I will tell you I do dislike about it is it's more like cleaning the old school coil-based electric ranges, the cheap ones, you know, like the $200 or $300, maybe $400 electric range that has the old school coils on the top. If I do ever go to electric again, I'm going to go to a flat top like I had.
I have
maybe induction if I can find one. But
do you need specialty pans for the induction?
Magnetic pans, so yeah. Cast iron will work on it.
You've already lost me there. Because that means you probably have to pay more for those pans.
Yeah. Well, not really, because a cast iron pan will work on it because it's ferromagnetic, and so that'll be fine. They got to be careful. You don't want to drop it on top of any electrical cooktop, especially any of the flat ones, because that'll shatter.
Crap out of it, yeah.
But because those are heavy. That's the one negative to cast iron is they're super heavy, but. I just love cooking on my cast iron.
I need some new flat pans.
Yep.
One of the problems that I've really noticed is like with your 11 or 12 inch like flat griddle pans.
Not Tulleda Falls.
Well, no, the whole point is that they don't have those walls. That's what I like about them, so that I can really get the spatula in there to flip things over. And as long as you're not cooking on something too greasy or too wet, you're perfectly fine. And no, the problem I have with them is that, you know, some of them do well. Like, there's this one that I had that had like this porcelain coating that did really well, but like all the other ones that are just like plain metal, like the third or fourth time you use them, start to bow and bend, and then before you set them back on the stovetop, you gotta bend them so that they're flat again. Stick your knee in the middle and pull the corners until it sits right, so that way it sits flat and cooks even.
You know a good place to go find good pans? Gordon Food Service.
Gordon Food Service?
Yeah, I don't know if you have one down there, but basically, it's a store kind of designed for people who are cooking in, like, commercial kitchens. And in one of their aisles, they have a good selection of pans. And they're cheap, you know, and the pros will buy them, too. So there's that, you know. But, I really haven't found a set that I like yet. I need to replace several of them that I have that I use all the time, like my wok.
My wife says that, you know, she wants to replace all of our pots and pans when the kids leave with nicer ones.
Right.
And I suppose we will do that, but then we'll also have to buy the ones that I actually use.
Yeah. I like the ones, like the stainless steel ones that have the real thick bottom on them. Those work nice. If I get those, and I'm gonna get one that doesn't have any of the coating on it. Even stainless steel, you can make stainless steel not stick. You just gotta put the right thing underneath of it, of your food. You know, a little bit of oil.
I'll tell you what. There's nothing like when I go and make an egg in my cast iron pan and. It's just as non-stick as the non-stick pan I have that I no longer use because the kids scratched it up.
Yep.
The week after I bought it. Another.
Totally agree. And
everything stuck to the bottom?
Yeah. It was. Wait, on what? The
coated one.
Yeah, it's not that bad yet. It's just every time I look at it, I get upset. I'm like, right. why did I even buy this? I'm like, I told them, don't use metal utensils in there.
It wasn't the green one, was it?
Like the first day that they use it, you know, there's that steel spatula.
Yeah.
Boom, steel spoon. Boom, boom.
Scraping the bottom off. I'm like, you're not supposed to fry in that thing. Come on.
Yep. Try it.
You're not searing a steak in there.
Cast iron doesn't care what the hell you use on it. In fact, metal works better on them. I don't understand. Well, the one way I think people destroy them is they want to treat a cast iron pan the same as any other pan, so they'll stick them cast irons in the dishwasher. That will kill it.
Yeah.
You have to reseason it.
That'll make it extremely rusty.
Yes. And you can restore the rusted ones, you know, that's what a Dremel's for. grind that rust off, and it'll be just good as new after you season it again. Well,
how do you season it?
Oil, and some people will put it in the oven. If you buy a Lodge, they come pre-seasoned. So, but generally, whenever I've not actually had to reseason any of my cast iron that I have yet. But it's really easy. I mean, it's just coated in oil, and some people will say stick it on a burner and burn the oil off, and then like get rid of the carbon. There's a couple good web pages on it, but I've never actually had to reseason mine yet. Now, what I do want to get is. And I don't know if you have one, Dan, But they have that chainmail scrubber for cast iron. I want to get one of those yet. I don't have one yet.
Well, they do look cool. I just don't know how well they work.
Yeah.
I suppose they work decently, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's... And, you know, you're just scraping it, and you never put... You can, like, if you have something that's really stuck on... I have put soap in my pants. I usually don't, though, because I like to try and avoid that, because the soap will help wash away some of the seasoning. The water generally won't. I've never, like I said, never, even with putting the occasional soap on it, you don't want it to soak. You just put a little bit in there and a little bit of water, and that's it. Scrub it right away. Don't let it soak. If you let it soak, that's gonna make it worse. But generally, though, I don't do anything that drastic to take care of it. Then it's as time goes on, it's just getting more and more nonstick, more and more smooth. So I like it. Yep. I need to get some more. I actually want to get. They have the pan for making cornbread in, where it's like sticks, and they look like ears of corn. I'd love to get one of those. Cause I actually that like whenever I make chili, that's what I make my cornbread in, is in the cast iron pan. And you will not have a better cooked cornbread than doing it in that. That's the way to go. But it's 10 o'clock.
Yeah,
time to wrap it up.
Yeah.
I don't know what shows are coming up for Linux Fest or anything like that. I think they don't start up until what, summer, I think. I know that's when Southeast Linux Fest is. Right now, I'm not planning on going to it. That's about all I can think of at the moment. Oh, but it's a long weekend for people like myself who work for higher ed.
Oh, yeah. I
Martin Luther King Day is Monday. Yep. We get that one. We also get Juneteenth now.
And yeah, the next 16th is a holiday.
Yep. Yep. The next one we get is not till Memorial Day. So. So I do have a long weekend this weekend. Yay!
Ay, ay, ay.
So, see y'all next week.
Yes. Here we go. I'm going to play us out. Here are your promos. Thank you, everybody. There you go.
I am short.
Oh, my God.
It's Hacker
Public Radio.
Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called LibreQuest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Yeah.
Here you go. I have to look and see what Walmart wants for the cast iron Dutch oven. Looks like the lid do you get with it. You can cook with the lid too. Yeah, the lid could be a 10-inch skillet. Expensive though, it's $50 just for that.
Sucking the ass.
What? Did we not get a recording?
Oh no, I gotta.
Oh.
Let me see here. I'm trying to get my UniFi thing back up and running. The UniFi software, and I took backups, except I don't know whether I copied them over to my... where they should be. Probably not. I'm gonna have to look on my NAS. I think it might be over there. I should have put them across multiple places.
That sounds good.
What? Put them across multiple places?
Yeah.
Yeah, I should have. I was doing good about taking backups of it too.
Actually, what I should do is I should go to the thrift store and see if I can find any cast iron there.
I'm going to have to yank this hard drive out of the other system that died and see if I can pull stuff off it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me see. I should get the show out.
I need to get some bigger hard drives and do some consolidation.
I think my 12 terabyte hard drive is dying.
I don't have anything that big. Why did I make my buddy meeting at 7:30?
Why not?
Well, I knew I had to make it because two of my buddies are from India. I had to make it early in the morning for them. My other one's in North America, and when don't we shoot the shit on Slack all the time. Yeah, my other buddy's the guy on our team that has whose wife has breast cancer right now. He was out Monday, I think. Yeah, he was out Monday for his wife's first chemo. He said the only side effect that she had was she was just really tired. The next day, that was it. So there's that. By the way, they just updated some of the movies on YouTube now, so there's quite a bit more free ones to watch if you have the premium. Like, you guys, well, Dan might remember, but do you remember the movie Disorderlies with the fat boys in it?
Oh, I do remember that movie.
Yeah. Thank you,
yeah, that's free right now.
Wow, that takes it back.
Like, that's the not sad. A little. That's the sad thing with that movie is, Marky D and the beatbox. I can't remember what his name was, but the biggest Fat Boy and the smallest one both passed away. Only Cool's left. Yeah, I did get to see the trailer for Night Court, the new Night Court.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They're redoing it.
Yeah.
Is it the same people?
Well, okay. The premise is that the Night Court judge is now Abby Stone, who was Harry's daughter. All right. Okay. And John Larroquette is in it. I don't know if he's playing
his old lawyer self.
Yeah.
John Larroquette's awesome. I don't care what anybody says.
The trailer, though, he's got a huge neck beard. So
he's what, 70? 70?
He's getting up there, man.
The last TV show he was on was The Librarians.
Yeah, well, he had his own show, too. The John Larroquette show.
But that was a long time ago. The John Larroquette show was almost directly after his run on Night Court.
Yes. It was a different character completely, but it was still him.
Yeah.
And he was in the Stripes.
He's been in a lot. Yeah. What was that? The Tenth Kingdom?
I don't remember that. Now I think
it was the Tenth Kingdom.
Well, Harry Anderson died.
I ended up switching to, because I figured higher temperature, maybe that was the issue. So I switched to a 0.6 millimeter and still the same issues with the PET G. So I switched to PLA and everything started working fine again. So yeah, I still don't know what the problem is, but I'll print out with the rest of the PLA that I have and then either switch to try and use an enclosure with the PET G and see what happens, or set up an enclosure for the ABS, which absolutely needs an enclosure to print.
For sure.
Or just order some more PLA.
Yep. I think I'm going to order some more. I have black and orange. Then I think I have a whole bunch that I had brought over from storage. It's mostly pieces, parts, not enough for any big prints. So I need to try printing some of that and see if I can't get rid of it.
Yeah, well, I've been sick for like the last 48 hours. I didn't work today, but I did try and work yesterday, and that didn't work out too well. And then basically, I slept from
figure out last the connector,
night.
Whack it off, and just make it.
Exactly. I slept from last night around like 11 p.m. till about 5 p.m. this afternoon. And I do feel a little bit better. But I am slightly medicated as well.
That sucks.
It was nice sleeping that long.
Yeah. I go to bed pretty much right after the show tonight. I got a 7:30 call that's my own that I can't miss. So
try and pick up some heavy things right either during the show or right after the show, and or during the show and after the show.
Yeah.
Go to bed because I should probably go into the office tomorrow on Friday.
And I'm on call this week, and of course all of our clients are trying to print 1098Ts and 99s and W-2s and all that, and of course there's a bug. So, that's been my day.
Tired.
And I had one of them power bowls from Taco Bell for dinner.
That's cool. I made my, I probably should have made it over the weekend, but I made my burritos today.
There you go.
I still gotta bag them up this evening. Then next thing on my list for meal prep is gonna be spaghetti sauce.
Nice.
quite a tasty spaghetti sauce, but it's definitely not as tasty as my burritos, which after I got done cooking, I had some, and yeah, I did a real good job on this batch.
I need to do up, found a recipe for low-carb pizza dough.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to try that. What did they call it? I have to go back and look at my timeline.
I use, I understand making your own dough, but I found it just easier to either use the extra large high-fiber tortillas or to use lavash bread.
Mm-hmm.
And both of those work really well for a nice thin crust, quick pizza that comes out to around like 300 to 400 calories, depending on how I make it. Which is great for a meal. And I like doing the ham and pineapple or the turkey pepperoni.
Hormel has sliced chorizo now.
I don't know what that is.
It's a Mexican sausage.
You never heard of chorizo?
Yeah, chorizo.
He didn't say chorizo. He said chorizo.
Oh, I probably.
I know what chorizo is.
Yeah, it's that. Not what you thought it was. Then the other day I made a low-carb taco casserole.
So you're going low carb?
I'm not going like strictly keto.
Right. Well, there's a difference between keto and low carb.
Yeah, I'm still eating.
You're reducing your calories by reducing the overall amount of carbs.
Well, I'm reducing the carbs part more than anything because my sugar has been, I won't say out of control, but not great.
Well, it's easy for your sugars to get out of control. In the world we live in these days.
Oh yeah, I put the taco casserole in the chat. It's actually really easy to make and delicious.
They have a
And
I mean,
it
seems
go.
Like a decent recipe. I'm looking here.
It is.
But I'd make some swaps. The the ground beef, swap that out.
You need turkey. Yeah.
Ground turkey, extra lean ground turkey, or ground chicken if you want a bit more. Well, with the ground chicken, you got to season that up a bit more to get the flavor to really pop.
Yeah, I might make some adjustments too because it has to use heavy cream. I don't think it needs that. I think milk's fine.
Well, what I would switch out there with, when it comes to the sour cream and the milk is I'd probably do either a skim milk or an almond milk. And then for the sour cream, I would definitely do a low-fat Greek yogurt.
All right. Well, sour cream's not extremely high in fat anyway.
Yeah, but the whole point with the low-fat Greek yogurt is it's higher in protein, which leaves you fuller.
Right.
But this is just me. And then the four large eggs, I'd probably swap that for one large egg, and then, what is it, 150 grams of egg whites, or egg beaters.
Right. All right, there, I put that fathead dough recipe in the chat, too. It looks the closest to pizza dough of anything I've seen.
And I'd probably also step up the diced tomatoes and green chilies. I mean, the diced tomatoes, the 10-ounce can, those things are great. I use them all the time.
Yeah, Rotel.
But I'd also want to add in, like, some pico or something. Gallo.
Yeah, I made it kind of like it was because I figure if I really want to kick it up a notch, I can throw some stuff on mine.
Oh, and Walmart has those grilled peppers and onions. But for this, I probably wouldn't use the grilled peppers and onions. They have an onion blend, which has smaller chunks of peppers and onion. That might go good.
Yeah.
I haven't eaten much today because I slept for like 16 hours.
Yep.
I'm hungry and we're talking about food. It's perfect.
But yeah, I'm gonna probably try this recipe. I'm probably going to start with the base food processor based one. But it has like cheeses in the dough and almond flour, coconut flour and almond flour, I think.
So this is four servings? What it said?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, and this is for...
About 10 or 12 inch pizza is what I'm guessing.
Taco casserole.
Oh, the casserole. Yeah, it's about four. Yeah. Yeah, that's probably about four.
It sounds more like two servings.
Well, I was telling the wife, says, I kind of want to double it because I had mine and I went to go get seconds and I'm like, oh, hey. Crap, it's gone already.
No, because if I were to do this recipe right here, this low-carb taco casserole, which it does sound good, I would definitely either double it or triple it. I think double
it. Yeah.
And then meal prep it.
Yeah, double it would be good. Plus, I also think, like, if you had some of those low-carb tortillas or something.
I have a lot of them.
Yeah, just put a scoop of that in there, and it would be delicious.
And I don't know. I'd have to put some kind of hot sauce in the mix.
Yeah. Or maybe a little bit of ground chipotle or something like that.
Yeah.
Kicking up a little bit. I might try a variation on this.
I'm taking this recipe here. I'm gonna do horrible things to this recipe, and I'm gonna let you know all about it.
I might try mixing up some of the stuff and make an Italian.
Look, it is so much cheaper right now to get like egg substitute compared to getting frickin' eggs that I don't think I'm even gonna mess around and try and put one egg in there and for every three egg whites egg beaters. I'm just gonna go straight egg beaters on this.
Yeah.
But no, the price for eggs right now is freaking atrocious.
Yeah, like $3 a dozen.
No. It's what was it? It was $7 for an 18 pack.
Yeah, it depends where you're at.
Well, here it's freaking insane how much they want for eggs.
Yeah, I pay that anyway, and I have been paying kind of close to that because I usually get Eggland's Best, which are my favorite eggs.
I like eggs. I usually have it in a bunch of my recipes. You know, not as much as most people would want in their meals, but they add a lot of flavor, and there's a lot of vitamins and minerals in the egg yolk that are really good for you. So,
yep.
But with the prices the way they've been, I've just stayed away from.
Yep. You ready to go, Dan?
I am. When you guys finish talking about your dinners.
We like talking about food.
You do too, Dan. Don't lie.
Dude, we're talking about cooking. You can't diss on talking about cooking.
I didn't say that.
Nope.
It's in the pre-show. Post-show.
You know what?
Every time we start talking about something else during the show, I'm just going to turn it back towards cooking.
It's all right with me.
All right. This is 897.